The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Ro. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Ro. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Ro. Go to ro.co/listen to see if you qualify. Rx only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Killer Grip coming up here in about 60 minutes, as we always do, at 9 o'clock. Station Buzz coming your way here in just a few moments, but we're asking at 216-474-0092. Are you excited for the Guardians in the All-Star game? And Bill is in Parm, wanted to jump in. What's going on, Bill?
Hey, Jake. Enjoying the program.
Appreciate that, Tom. What do you got, man?
Well, I think what my biggest concern in baseball right now is the dummying down and of baseball, and it's to the nth degree. Travis Bazan is not an All-Star, and he's batting .238. He should not even be in the major leagues. He didn't even have very good averages in the minor leagues. And the fact that Major League Baseball would even at some level say this guy is a quote-unquote all-star is pathetic. And but this is a symptom of the Guardians. Back in 1995 to 2000, the Indians averaged their batting average. Do you have any idea what their batting average was during those 5 years? Average?
I don't have theirs off the top of my head, but I have seen the trends of baseball average over the last 20 or so years. It is definitely steepened off. Yeah.
It was .295.
Yeah.
And our batting average right now is .226. Now, when I was growing up back in the day, the Indians had a no-hitting shortstop by the name of Eddie Brinkman. He also played for Washington. He had a lifetime batting average. He played a long time in the major leagues of .224. And he wasn't worth going to watch hit. He was a good defensive man, but you would never go see Eddie Brinkman bat. What we're seeing in baseball is, one, they cut the number of teams in the minor leagues. Two, now they're going to also cut the number of draft picks that they're going to get. Number three is the American black athlete doesn't play baseball anymore. So we don't have a Willie Mays anymore, a Willie McCovey, or a Hank Aaron. Those guys are gone. And so what we're watching is Travis Bazana, all .238 of him, playing in the All-Star game, which is an embarrassment, and we're trying to make ourselves enjoy it. How can that even be a thought?
I mean,
how can that even be a thought?
There's a little bit to it, Bill, and I don't disagree with you on a lot of your points. I appreciate the call. I mean, listen, like when we come down to average, yes, baseball is obviously, diversified away from average is an entirety, and now the ball is, it's about putting the ball over the wall. It's about extra base hits. It's about how many. And listen, like, I do enjoy baseball much more throughout the early 2000s, and when we would watch players actually go out there, and you talk about teams hitting .295. I think that was more enjoyable to watch on a lot of levels. I don't know that directly correlates to Travis Bazan. I'm like, yeah, does .238 sound like an all-star second baseman? No. I think there's two major things playing a factor into that, though. One, I mean, in a lot of ways, the all-star game comes down to a fan vote, and that's the way where people vote and what they want to see. Two, you take a look at the second baseman right now in the American League. Like, again, when you point to the way that the game has shifted, .238 would typically not get you into an all-star game for a very long time. Yes, it is true. You take a look at the second baseman right now hitting in baseball. It's not a ton of great ones. Like, we're, especially in the American League, like, you can get excited about Xavier Edwards. He's hitting .303. Like, exciting, interesting. It's one of the better hitters in baseball right now. I just don't know that he's all that exciting and all that polarizing to watch play. I mean, with six homers and everything else. And it's not that Travis Pastrana has been great. I too was actually a little surprised to see him in the All-Star game. The number looked a lot better. And again, when he pulled a lot of this fan voting, he's obviously gone through a rough stretch over the last few weeks comparatively to when the voting started, when he was on much of a hotter stretch. And some of the second basemen have taken an additional approach off. Like Ernie Clement, he's still been up there, still hitting with a high average, but I don't think a lot of people get excited to watch Ernie Clement play baseball either. Like, it's just so much of it is the fan vote. Maybe that's where part of it loses me. Again, I'm excited for Travis. I think he's going to be great for years to come. I don't think he should still be in the minors. I think he's major league ready comparatively to where the rest of the league is at right now. I just don't know how excited I can get. Again, All-Star game's going to happen. We'll give you updates as it does. If anything big pops up, Michael will definitely have it in his updates. But without any further ado, let's get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest today with the station buzz. All right, a reminder before we get started here, all of the guests here appeared on the Wisehart Right, We Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Let's start things off. John Fanta, NBC Sports, on with Afternoon Drive, as he is every single Tuesday, and tried to give a little insight into what is it that LeBron is waiting for.
I think he knows at this point, what is it that you're waiting for? I mean, okay, so let's just say it's the Cavs, and it's the Cavs if they do something. What, if they make some sort of a trade? Well, it's not like they've got a ton of moves that you feasibly look at and say, yeah, that's what they've got to do. I mean, Jaylen Brown is off the market. So if it was a Jaylen Brown influence thing, you would have said, all right, he's got his mind made up now and he's heading to Philadelphia. Golden State, what is it that they're going to do in the next week or two that's going to significantly change his mind on their status? We all have gone through that route, and that route begins and ends with Steph Curry. You know, what's the Draymond Green component to this? I mean, that is part of the reality of this equation with the amount that's been rumored about them potentially teaming up. But LeBron James, he's smart, and he knows he can be on his time.
And I think that's the biggest thing that John hits on the end. Like, I don't know that there's anything LeBron's legitimately waiting for. Very early on, you could talk about teams making moves, and we had the Anthony Davis to Golden State type of conversation. At this point, I don't think LeBron's waiting for anybody to do anything except for himself to make a decision. It might not even be to make it a decision. It might be to announce said decision, to go about announcing said decision in the way that he wants to go about announcing that decision. I think so much more of that is just the, I can do this, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to make it, you know, as drummed up, dramatic as I want it to be. I'm going to get people talking about this decision as we have been for, you know, 2 weeks ongoing, talking about the LeBron decision, what he's going to end up doing. I think that is just LeBron being the business side of things, knowing that he has everybody's attention, knowing he can do what he wants to do. I think it's still also a miscalculation. Like, hey, I'm still excited about the decision. I'd be blatantly lying to you, as I've told you over the last week or so, if I told you it had the same amount of attention, the same amount of gravitas to it as when LeBron decided he wasn't going back to the Lakers, right? Or even just entering this offseason on what is LeBron going to do. Even when we thought it was going to be the Lakers, it was still more entertaining than what we have reached right now. I just don't think you have a ton of excitement drummed up around it. And it is going to be exciting when the decision is made, but you have basically lost everything outside of that. All of the, hey, you're actually going to get me excited for this right now. I'm still going to be drummed up talking about it and having a million conversations about what LeBron could do to this team. Yeah, I mean, we're still having some of the conversations, but it's not with the same level of enthusiasm. And I think we've all, again, kind of reached that point of, hey, just go ahead and make your decision when you're going to make it, LeBron. Like, we're all sitting around waiting, but I wouldn't say we're sitting around waiting with, you know, kind of on the edge of our seat. We're just kind of sitting around and waiting. We'd like to know the decision. It'll be exciting when we know it, but that's about as far as it goes now. All right, Mike Silski, WIP, out in Philly, as well as the Philly Inquirer, on this morning with Ken and Anthony, making his pitch on why he thinks LeBron should join the 76ers.
If he goes to Philadelphia, He will be a god forever if he helps the Sixers win their first championship since 1983. That's really what this comes down to. The kind of reassertion of Bob Myers as a major factor within the organization. Now, look, that's not really a shot at Morey as much as I'm making it sound, but the bottom line is Bob Myers is one of the few people in and around the NBA, because of his time with the Warriors, who can look someone like a LeBron or a Joel Embiid in the eye and say, hey, man, I got four rings. Here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to do it. The Sixers have kind of realigned their philosophy in their front office that way. And the second thing is now that the Sixers have made some moves in this offseason. They were able to offload the George contract and get Jaylen Brown in return. B.J. Edgecombe and Tyrese Maxey are, you know, young emerging stars. Maxey really already is one. And so the situation, at least in people's minds here, became a whole lot more attractive to someone like LeBron than it had been, say, you know, 5 or 6 weeks ago.
And listen, I've talked about Philly as definitely a team that I view with a lot of respect in this conversation. Maybe even a little bit of fear in this conversation that they end up getting LeBron. But I think the main difference in this conversation is where we talk about it is if LeBron brings a title back to Philly, he will be revered as a god. LeBron is already revered as a god here. Like, he has already reached that status, and he hasn't reached it in Philly. And I think there's a much different conversation for... what if LeBron goes to Philly and doesn't win one? I don't know that they're going to hate him. I don't know that they're going to dislike anything LeBron is bringing you. And especially because you go and play in Philadelphia, you're playing on a veteran minimums contract. So I don't think people are going to be like, oh, we wasted all this time, went out there and did all of this for LeBron. You didn't really do anything for LeBron. You went out and did everything for this team for themselves. And then LeBron happened to just tag along on the ride. That's the difference maker in it. And obviously, he would play a massive impact in it. He would still be one of the best players that they have. But it's just, I don't know that he gets the same hate. And maybe that's something he's looking at. Because I wouldn't doubt the idea that Philly fans could boo LeBron at some point during his time there. But it would boo LeBron because he's not delivering on what they think he should be delivering on. A similar way to where we view Cleveland. We're disappointed with the Cavs, not because they're bad, but because they're not delivering on what we think they're capable of. They're not just going to go out and boo him to boo him. You pay him $40 million a year at age 41 and he doesn't deliver. Yeah, there's going to be some really upset people. But again, that's not what this is going to be. It's going to be a $4 million contract. You're handing LeBron the veteran minimum and he goes out and performs for what he wants. It makes sense if he wants to join the Sixers. Again, that is why I think there's a ton of fear there. And I do think that the idea of breaking the streak is, you know, Mike had laid out, not having won a title since 83, I do think that's something that would appeal to LeBron of maybe I could bring a title to Philly. Maybe I could make one more team that, hey, let me get you back to where you want to be. And even right now, I mean, we are seeing current stage LeBron. I mean, with the Cavs and with the Heat when he had left there, you saw what he had left the team into. A lot of times it was, I mean, basically complete despair. There wasn't a whole lot to be rooting for, not a whole lot to be hanging on to after he left. We're seeing right now in LA, he leaves, team's in still really good hands. I think whether he plays a year, 2 years in Philly, no matter what happens, probably going to leave Philly in pretty good hands too. Like, there's just not going to be that much upset about. And again, it is why you take them under such serious consideration and think that they do have a good shot and end up landing LeBron. Their worst case, they're only paying him the veteran minimum, and I don't know that LeBron's ever going to play for that. All right, let's keep it rolling. Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, on with Baskin and Phelps today and detailing the Browns' plan with four quarterbacks once again.
They will keep three on the roster. That will be the plan for this season. Deshaun's not going anywhere. I don't think Shador is going anywhere. I think there's a world in which Dylan Gabriel can be the third quarterback on this roster. Kalen Green, if he's not able to demonstrate in training camp that he can handle some of those responsibilities that they would like him to do in his rookie season, if he needs more time and seasoning, I guess there's a world in which he could possibly end up on the practice squad. And so they still have to mess around with that a little bit. And if they do end up trading Dylan Gabriel, which that's always a possibility, then perhaps they can add another quarterback to the mix. So we might not have the exact four guys that will be here throughout the season, but I do think that in some way, shape, or form that there probably will be four, three on the roster, one on the practice squad.
Yeah, listen, the alignment of it is what makes the most sense, and I think that's the way that most teams pretty much carry it is going to be, I mean, now that you get the emergency third quarterback to be actively a part of the roster, not having a chance to get poached off the practice squad, it lines up. We've talked about the Taylen Green thing like months back. I don't know he's surviving a practice squad. I don't know it's a guy that you want on the practice squad and not as the emergency third. right? It feels like somebody that you want on the active roster because of what he provides, because of the different packages that you can use him in. And I think Todd Monken and the Browns would like to experiment with that. I still think the most likely scenario is that Dylan Gabriel is not here in some capacity. Might be a trade, might be for a day three pick and a late one at that. I think the most likely scenario is that he's probably not on the roster because, listen, maybe you can get Dylan Gabriel past the practice squad. I doubt it. I still think somebody would probably claim him at some point during the season just because it is worth it. He was a rookie a year ago, and he has started games in the NFL, so he'd probably get that opportunity of, oh, we need a backup quarterback to our backup quarterback. Dylan Gabriel's not that bad. Oh, we need an emergency third quarterback. Dylan Gabriel wouldn't be the worst option comparatively to what's on the market. That's still going to continue to be my preference. I don't know how you expect to make this thing work, and I don't think you just draft Taylen Green to throw him in there for training camp, see if it works, see what you can get out of it, and then be like, yeah, you're good. I think that is the type of guy you look to keep on a roster, keep cheap, keep for as long as you possibly can, and just say we drafted him in the sixth round. If he turns out to be nothing, if we get, you know, 3 or 4 years through this contract and he is still nothing, not going to really be a whole lot of sweat off our backs if I'm Andrew Berry that, the sixth round quarterback didn't work out. Like, again, welcome to the expectation.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Ro. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Ro, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to ro.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to ro.co/safety.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
And what is supposed to happen with quarterbacks. So, again, most likely scenario, I think that Dylan Gabriel's not here by the time the year starts. They're not giving him a chance to run for the starting quarterback. Clearly, Todd Monken doesn't see it. Clearly, Andrew Berry's not attached to seeing it anymore either. I think they've seen enough of Dylan Gabriel and are pretty good on that front. All right, last one. Albert Breer of the MMQB on with Afternoon Drive today asked whether or not you need the top-tier quarterback at this point to still win a Super Bowl.
I think part of it has to do with the environment you're in, too. I mean, what conference were the four quarterbacks that I named in? They're all in the AFC, right? And what conference are Sam Darnold and Jalen Hurts in? They're in the NFC, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the Browns' premise was a little bit more on, like, the price of admission in the AFC. And last year was different. I think last year created an opportunity and an opening. I think Drake May's got a chance to crack that group. But, like, I mean, part of him getting there was the door, I think, in the AFC last year was open more than it probably will be for a while for somebody to step through and step up and do what New England did, you know? So, like, I still think the premise that the Browns were working with was, I think, relatively logical and relatively clean, which was, this is the environment we're competing in now, and if we're going to pay a quarterback at the top of the market, he needs to be in that group.
And listen, I do still think there's something to having the top-tier quarterback, especially as Albert lays out, like, inside of the AFC. And I think it's why, in a lot of these cases, you're not going to watch, oh, well, Shador might just be good enough. And I do think you can survive with the non-top-five quarterback, but I think a team is always going to continue to search for it if they have the chance. The odds that the Browns get an opportunity to draft really high, you know, in the 2027 class, take a quarterback and go, do I think he's going to be better than Shador? Do I think he's going to be better than a veteran option sitting out there? So many of those ideas point to yes, just based off of where you're drafting him. You probably take the shot on it if you think you're getting mediocre quarterback play next to it. You just take the risk because of what you're sitting at in the AFC. The NFC gets away with it a little bit more, but even in the AFC right now, I mean, you're dealing the four quarterbacks that Albert Breer mentioned and had named are your Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. Guys, two of those play in the AFC North. Like, it's not just a conference problem. It is a division problem. You have to play two of what is widely considered the top four quarterbacks in the NFL twice a year apiece. really difficult to make that work when your offense is being run by, yeah, this guy might be the 29th best quarterback in the NFL. We might just survive. Even this guy being the 17th best quarterback in the NFL, 15th best quarterback in the NFL, still going to be really difficult to survive if you don't have an elite defense, which Browns have a really good defense. We're going to find out this year whether or not it's elite. All right. That'll do it for the Station Buzz. Again, all those guests appearing on the Wise Heart Right, We Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright Hotline. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, we're going to talk a little bit of Browns. And Carson Schlesinger, is he getting enough love in the city for what he actually is in just one season? We're going to break down as to why that conversation comes up and whether or not it's true. Again, coming up in five right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime, and we're asking you 216-474-0092. Is Carson Schlesinger getting enough love in Cleveland? And it's kind of an odd question for me because I definitely don't feel that, you know, and people dislike Carson in any way, but I don't know that he's getting treated with the proper respect that he really should at this point either, which just doesn't feel like a normal occurrence to be actively happening. And it all stems from, obviously, you know, we're getting our top 10 rankings coming out from ESPN, the execs, coaches, kind of ranking the top at each position. And it was off-ball linebackers today. And we saw Carson Schlesinger get ranked third in the off-ball linebackers conversation after one season, falling just behind Fred Warner and Roquan Smith. Like, two guys who are considered widely elite. And it wasn't even just, oh, well, he got a really nice nod. I mean, some of the quotes and things that are being put in there, the quote from a personnel executive with an NFL team said, he's Luke Kuechly reincarnated, elite speed, athleticism, instincts, ball skills. Reincarcerated would not be, you wouldn't want that. That would just be incarcerated. As far as I know, Luke Kuechly, not locked up at any point during his life, but never know. Really hard to take care of the news, but reincarnated. But I don't know that it's wrong. Like, he does have a lot of Luke Kuechly to him, which is kind of like the odd comparison that I feel like we made even right out of the gate during the season here. But we have these conversations when we talk about the Browns defense and do they have a face of the defense? I find it really difficult to go through and look at almost any player at an individual position and say, you're the top three at that position and you're not the face of that side of the ball. Right, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Like, off-ball linebacker is probably one of those spots. You take a look at Roquan Smith, still probably the head of the defense, if not very close to it for the Ravens. I think you talk about Fred Warner, I think absolutely the face of the defense, but also still a debate for the 49ers. Like, if you want to say Nick Bosa, I think he's probably the most recognizable guy in the one that people would say has the most impact happening, but Fred Warner is in ridiculously elite player back-to-back years that he's been the number one off ball linebacker in these rankings. But you go and you take a look at, let's say, running backs is like the one position I went to where I go, okay, we make the comparison and I always say linebacker is kind of the running back of the defense. It is typically the underpaid position. You don't invest a ton of money to off ball linebackers, and people say they're replaceable in a lot of the same ways. Okay, well, running backs, top three running backs in the NFL. Bijan Robinson, face of the Falcons offense. Jahmyr Gibbs, there's a debate with Amon-Ra, but I would still definitely say Jahmyr Gibbs is the face of the Lions offense. And Saquon Barkley, I would still make the argument the face of the Eagles offense. I think he's ahead of Jalen Hurts, and I think most Eagles fans would agree. So hey, those are still guys you're talking about. You can still go down. Christian McCaffrey, face of the 49ers offense. Jonathan Taylor, face of the Colts offense. And then you get to Derrick Henry, finally not the face of his own team's offense. Like, and then we get into, you know, James Cook, that's Josh Allen, obviously, for the Ravens, and Derrick Henry, it's Lamar Jackson. Even number eight in Devon Achane, that's because the Dolphins stink, but the face of his offense. Like, you just do get players in the top 10, and certainly with inside the top three at an individual position, they have to be the player that you point to. And I think it's so easy to point to Jared Verse and say, well, that's the guy who's going to take over. He's the one who's going to be the poster boy when we talk about the Browns on that side of the ball. And I guess like the immediate retaliation to that is, why is it not Carson Schlesinger? Why is he not the guy that should be, I mean, applauded and put as the face of the defense? if we're talking about, you know, a Luke Kuechly type comparisons, Luke Kuechly at the time he was there, I would say was undoubtedly the face of the Panthers defense. He is the guy that they pointed to. When you talk about the instincts that Carson Schlesinger plays with, the amount of plays that he's involved in, and it did feel like almost on every single play that you watch from Browns defense this year, yeah, it was Miles. He was obviously the face of it, and you could say it felt like he was involved on every single play. And for a lot of it, he was. I mean, 23 sacks isn't anything, you know, he's not nothing. But any play that got past the line of scrimmage, it constantly felt like I was watching Carson Schlesinger stand up out of the pile. That's the guy who was over and over and over again, the guy that gets pointed to. And Albert Breer was on with Afternoon Drive today, and they'd asked him about Schlesinger and the ranking that he got, and Albert had a really interesting answer.
I remember somebody saying this to me about Schlesinger in April of 2025. So this would be like leading up to him being drafted. And I remember hearing his name, and his name kind of came across my desk late. Like I was a little bit behind on that, but like a couple people had said to me, like late in the process, like, yeah, he's got a chance to sneak in the bottom of the first round. And I had one scout say to me, it's almost hard to evaluate anyone else on UCLA's defense because he is making literally every play. You know, I can't remember if I voted. I think I voted him second team all pro. I think I may have put him first team, but like when you are getting like serious all pro mention, I mean, that is, I think there are only two linebackers for each of the all pro teams. So if you're on those all pro lists, that means people view you as one of the top four linebackers in all football. And, you know, I think it was really clear that Schlesinger already after his rookie year was being seen as one of the top players in the sport at his position.
So, and that is absolutely, it's such a testament to get there in 1 year. And again, I understand that it's not a position that is just riddled with ridiculous talent, like some of the guys below him on the list, Zach Bond of the Eagles. We're talking about Jack Campbell on the Lions, Aziz Al-Shaair on Houston. Like, we don't have elite off-ball linebackers in the NFL, although all the guys who I just named, like Nick Bolton is lower on this list, Evan Lloyd of the Panthers, they're really good players. It's not necessarily elite, but it does speak to when you get a guy that's elite, when you get to a guy that you imagine is absolutely going to get a second contract, I think that it goes to show just how impactful a player like that is. I would tell you right now, if after his rookie contract, if Carson Schlesinger is, I mean, even three quarters of what he was this year, the Browns would be fools to let him walk. When you talk about his impact on the field, when you talk about what he does in the run game, he was a major impact player for them. That was a guy that they needed. Their defensive line is not set up to stop the run. And while Miles was great at it, and I still think we saw like really good things out of Malik Collins while he was healthy, the main reason on why you were able to stop the run even as consistently as you did last year, and they weren't fantastic against it, they were good, Carson Schlesinger had a lot to do with that. And he wasn't bad in pass coverage. There were just things where you sit out there and you watch him and he's flying from the other side of the field. He reacts so quickly. I just think that's a guy that needs to be shown the appreciation that he should be getting. And that appreciation right now going into this year probably should be, if you're naming a face of the defense, I don't know that he even gets to be the number one guy after a season. If he's not there, he should be damn close. Like, his name is in the conversation with Jared Verse. It's in the conversation with Denzel Ward. I mean, he's more highly regarded in his position than Denzel is in his at this point. We've seen the cornerbacks list. Denzel fell at 7th. We saw the defensive end rankings. Jared Verse, really good 2 years. Like Carson, a defensive rookie of the year just the year prior, he's in the honorable mentions category. There is just a difference. And I think when we talk about his impact at the position, it is kind of unmatched right now. There's not a ton of guys. I imagine if you get even two more seasons of him doing what he did this year, there's a chance you're talking about Carson is not the third best linebacker, but closer to the first or, I mean, maybe second best linebacker that's being talked about. He is that good. He is in that category. I think should be treated as such. 216-474-0092. Is Carson Schlesinger getting enough love in Cleveland right now? And coming back here in 5 minutes, we know Deshaun's running his own quarterback camp, right? And getting the entire team in for a workout down in South Florida. Is this entire process between him and Shador and Deshaun running the camp a problem waiting to happen with the Browns? Again, we get to that in 5 minutes right here on The Fan. Get a grip coming your guys' way here in about 18 minutes at 9 o'clock, as we always do. But as we continue to have a conversation about the Browns, I do want to take a step into the quarterback side of things. And really in the next step in the process of where we're getting in the offseason. Obviously, we're, what, I think about 9 days away from official reporting to training camp for at least the rookies. And then the vet's going to join them about a week later. But it is really interesting the way that the offseason, you know, quarterback camp, whatever you want to call it. We know that Deshaun is hosting it. We heard the interaction between Deshaun and Shador and the reporters, all of them talking about Deshaun's plan is to go out there and host a camp, invite in all the teammates, do it in South Florida during this, you know, dead period before the Browns get to training camp. That is yet to happen. Right, we have not gotten to that point yet, and it just feels like as we get closer and closer to it.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to ro.co/listen to see if you qualify. RX only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. And this podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
It does kind of feel like a problem waiting to happen right now. And just, I don't even think you're going to get it be a problem on the side of Shador or the side of Deshaun. I don't think either of these guys are going to make it awkward or make it a real issue. But hey, it is just this awkward dynamic of one guy's hosting it and one guy's not. And we don't know if Shador's formally invited, officially invited. We assume that he is based on the way we talked about it, or the way that he had talked about it during this process. He said he's just going to go to Deshaun's. That's going to be the end of it. He's not going to host one of his own. And I had talked about, you know, Deshaun getting back to Berea first, being the guy to work out with the team prior to Shador having done it too, and being the guy to host the quarterback camp. It feels like at least trying to win over the public perception is where Deshaun was heading. I'm going to make sure I have everybody out, and I'm going to act as if I'm the starter. I am going to make sure I get back to Berea, because that's what the starter should be doing. He is operating in a way that is, this is my job, I deserve to have the job, I'm going to have the job. And I think Shador is trying to act that way too, but it just feels like Deshaun is a step ahead in that department in the game. And now things do legitimately get awkward. Like, if you're Shador, I would feel really weird about showing up to this camp. I'm not hosting it. I don't think Shador is going to have a problem with it again. I think either of these guys are going to make it an issue. But it does just feel like, I don't know, you're almost tagging along. And I would feel very awkward about that sense of it, of the guy I'm directly competing with is holding a camp. I'm now going to jump in and get onto that side of things and basically be the tag along, but I look like the backup. When he's hosting it, when he's drawing up the plans for it, in charge of paying for everybody to hang out in the, you know, South Florida, making sure that they get a nice little vacation out of it too while they're not working out, not going through this process, Deshaun's going to be the guy footing the bill. He's going to make sure all of the teammates get out there. They don't have to have things covered. And then again, one of the guys he is probably going to be covering in this process is going to be Shador Sanders. And it's not that I don't think Deshaun has the money to do it, because Deshaun definitely has the money to do it. Just ask his contract. You just feel like a little brother in that sense. And I think in a lot of ways, the backup quarterback in that sense. And I don't know that I would absolutely love it. And Albert Breer was asked about this awkward dynamic that's kind of going on right now, and he gave his thoughts on Afternoon Drive.
I would say if you have two quarterbacks with competing camps,
and the receivers and the running backs and the tight ends have to pick which to go to, you got bigger problems than scheduling. And you've got drama over that. That's probably not great, you know? So I think like in a case like this, if one quarterback is going to put it together, then you would hope that he would let the other quarterbacks know what the plan was and invite them to be part of it. And I think generally it would be the guy who's the most veteran guy. The presumed starter obviously would be the preference. And when there isn't one, I would think it would be the older guy. And I would think, like, you know, for Deshaun Watson, you know, you'd be cognizant of, like, yeah, I should probably invite the other quarterbacks down here with me. And if that didn't happen, then I certainly think, you know, you probably have a problem you don't want to have.
So, and I think Albert brings up a really good point on this, is that as much as this is Shador looking like he's taking the back seat and looking like in this entire process, oh, I'm the guy that's the backup, you're also in a no-win situation on that side of it, because you can't just walk in and be like, you know what, I'm going to host my camp too. I'm going to invite everybody else. You know what, I'm going to do it? I'm going to do it 3 days after you do it. I'm going to do it a week after you do it, because now you are legitimately asking guys to either A, be away from their family for, 2 weeks and not really have much of a vacation and off period to themselves. And I don't think most guys are going to want to do that. And if they're not going to go to both, they have to make the decision. Which camp do I pick? And that in and of itself is even more of an issue. Because now I'm being picked between which guy do I think is going to be the starter, which guy do I need to build a better relationship with. And I don't know that anybody on the Browns is sitting here knowing, hey, Deshaun's going to start, or hey, Shador's going to start, or this guy's most likely to start. I think you are pretty much just taking a gamble and having to take a risk. And it's probably a major reason on why Shador is not doing it, right? Because it does draw a bad problem. That does draw internal conflict and is going to be a serious issue. Because that's only going to lead to conversations in the locker room of, hey, Jerry Jeudy showed up to Shador's camp, but not Deshaun's, or vice versa. Why didn't you come to mine? Why weren't you there? Now we don't have as good of a connection, and now I'm the starter, right? In whatever direction that ends up playing out, it's where this entire thing just feels like, as much as they're going to make it friendly, and they're going to put it out to seem like everybody's having a great time, everybody's friends in this entire process, and this is just us being teammates. You can have that mentality. You can express that mentality. I think it's really difficult to actually put it into practice, right? I think it's so difficult to keep a line of, that's the guy trying to steal my job right now. Make sure I don't have maybe a chance to start in this league again for either guy. And might be the difference between me getting paid, a handful of million dollars down the road and me maybe never giving another contract in the NFL ever again. It goes deeper than that. It goes deeper than just, oh, we're teammates, kumbaya, everything's okay. I think it does create an odd power dynamic. In Albert trying to break it down, I think he has the right read on it. I think that you would go through and probably delegate this to either A, the presumed starter, which it doesn't feel like the Browns have right now, or B, just the guy who's the more veteran player in the room, the guy who's been around the block more, has done more of this, and that is Deshaun. So like, if one guy was going to hold the camp, and for me to make it make sense along an actual quarterback battle and not having bias thrown into it, I would agree with Albert. Deshaun is the quarterback that makes more sense to be holding this. I just don't know how you can keep the competitive aspect of it and keep the we're really friendly teammates aspect of it. Once you have a guy named, not that difficult, right? Like, oh, he's the starter. Now I have to support that guy. I think it's really easy. I think you should be able to root for them. I think with the connection Deshaun has to the Shador family, or the Sanders family, and the way that Shador, it feels like, has gravitated towards Deshaun. He was a kind of the mentor, is what we were being fed last year. It should be easy for both of those guys to root for one another, to support one another in whatever the roles end up being. Again, you put yourself into a process of, I think it's a lot easier said than done. I think it's really easy to say, yeah, I'm going to support Deshaun if I'm the backup. I'm going to support Shador if I'm the backup. I think both guys are going to think they're the better quarterback. Both guys are going to think, I should be the one leading this team. I should be the starting quarterback on this side. And then supporting the guy on the outside of it, you know, no strings attached, no relationship, no ill will for the decision that was made, is a really tough thing to hold yourself to. And I just don't know that it's all that capable. Now, I told you, a ton of different things happening. Deshaun looking like he's more the leader in the clubhouse from the leadership aspect of it. We talked about it earlier this offseason. Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com, was on with Baskin and Phelps today and just talked about on the broader scale what the quarterbacks have been up to.
I don't think many guys are there right now. This is really the dead period for them, and they are scattered all over the place, training in different spots and things like that. Mm-hmm. I know that Deshaun has popped in for a couple of weeks. I know Shador has been there. Harold Fannin threw with Deshaun a little bit. But for the most part, this is their break, and they actually need to get away and take this time and recharge their batteries and whatnot. But I do believe that Deshaun is hosting a passing camp in South Florida sometime soon. It's either going on this week or it will be next week. But they are working, and they're getting ready for the season, but not necessarily in Berea.
Yeah, and I think it's normal for guys to kind of work out, and I think Mary Kay lays out the again, it feels very performative when you say, oh, they're going back to Berea to work out, because you know either way these guys are getting ready. You know they're going to prepare to become or try to fight for the starting job, make sure they're on point. It's where the Berea side of it gets really performative for me of like, hey, you're just trying to show everybody else that you're working in front of them, and that's just the way that I see it. But the camp should be coming up here in some time. Again, it has to be this week or next week because we're getting closer to guys having to report. You want the rookies, if they want the opportunity to do it, to go and show up to these things. It does just feel like a kind of problem, a somewhere fork in the road of where guys are going to have to make a decision. And I think a lot of decision falling on Shador right now just might lead to a little bit of tension. 216-474-0092. Is the offseason quarterback camp a problem waiting to happen? Let's go out to the phones. Greg is in Youngstown. What's going on, Greg?
Yeah, so not a Shador hater, but I would expect this from Shador being how his dad is and how he's been brought up. But I honestly think this is just Deshaun grasping at straws to try and make his name out there and be relevant. I don't know that either one of them is going to win us more than 7 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that with Watson doing this, it's his last chance. So he's trying to, you know, put on a showcase. That way if he does start and gets knocked down to QB2, he hopes he can find a backup job. I give Shador credit, as much as I hate saying it, for not stooping to that level. You know, he's putting his performance during OTAs and during practice. He's not holding special camps or anything like that. So as much as I hate to say it, I got to give it to Shador for being the bigger man in this.
And Greg, I think you make a really good point on that aspect. I mean, Shador has handled it, and I appreciate the call, in a way that is, I mean, professional, right? Like, it has been teammates first. It has been positive enforcement. Don't pin the quarterbacks against each other. We're all one big happy family just trying to figure out how to win games. And I'd probably fall more into your camp that, hey, if I had to take my guess on it, I don't know how many wins either quarterback is leading you to. I don't really know that either of them are going to lead you to a fantastic season. I would probably line up with more of your thinking as well. This does feel performative for Deshaun, and somebody's going to hold one. Most teams do. The fact that it feels like Deshaun jumped on it and got out ahead of it early, and it didn't even seem like when Shador was asked the question, he was aware of what was going to happen. He's aware that Deshaun set it up. It does feel like it's a, hey, look at me, I'm doing the right thing type of move, rather than a, hey, we talked this out, we decided, hey, we know which way we're going to move forward. Feels like Deshaun just did that on his own, and if you're really all teammates and all on the same page, I think you'd probably all get on the same page. 216-474-0092. Is the offseason quarterback camp a problem waiting to happen? Plus, coming up here in 5 minutes, we're getting to Get a Grip, as we always do at 9 o'clock, right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.